I'm sure that you had very exciting presentations, and you have still questions, and we didn't have much time for the questions, but now it is time for raising these questions and discussing them with the speakers, with each other, and we have time, but if you think that everything was discussed, then we turn to our last two duties. Antonella will speak about the GAP, and we'll talk about the conference conclusions. So we plan to finish our conference by 4 o'clock latest. I think that's enough for discussion and for the two extra tasks. Now, I give the microphone to Antonella.
Thank you. Well, I think that we could usefully start from questions that we probably have put together listening at the presentation of this morning. We had this morning presentations about best practices in preservation and about technical facilities offered by the e-infrastructures. So my first invitation to you is if is there any question that you want to pose to the speakers of this morning and that was not possible to be done because we had a very heavy program this morning. Is there any question towards our speakers of this morning? Yes, thank you. I suggested that you present yourself.
My name's Gordon Kenner. I work for an organisation in the UK called Collections Trust. As the first speaker on clouds suggested, there's a lot of hype about clouds at the moment. So when do you think the hype will die down?
Yeah, all right. Well, if you believe in the... If the slides are still there, I can even show you... Takes longer than... No? If you do believe in the Gartner hype cycle, which is just one form of analyzing it, then we are now getting down away from the hype, if you want, down to the throw of disillusionment. You can believe in the hype cycle or not. You can definitely notice that at least in the area of academia and the technical perspectives, there is a lot more focus now on what the specific capabilities of cloud should be. So there is already kind of a technological disillusionment. The problem is, in this specific case, that there are a difference between the marketing position, which will continue to milk that hype as long as they can, and the actual technical part behind it. So I think, personally, that with the current movement, the current development at the European Commission side, that there will be a certain degradation of the hype. Hopefully, and that is another risk that's currently the case, plenty of technologies, even though not listed here, actually fall through. Right? I mean, the moment that the hype is unveiled or whatever, and one of the more risky things along that line is the grid. There was a great hype on the grid, right? And from the general public point of view, actually, it fell completely through the bottom of that of disillusionment, which is actually though not true because technically there is uptake. It's just not so visible because it's on the lower half of it. So I imagine that actually the hype will continue to disappear over the next few years, but as long as all market commercial providers will still get some money out of it, they will continue claiming that everything is cloud.
Would you like to add anything?
I haven't talked about hypes.
Steve?
So my name is Thierry Leclerc, working in text technology and language technology. my question would be about the kind of information in the libraries you want to structure. I mean, you mentioned in your talk that this is from unstructured to structured data. So which kind of thing, for example, in the French case, you want to structure? I mean, from text to database format. My second question would be about XML RDF as a kind of representation scheme. They also evolve over time, and if this is not an issue for the persistency of information, so how long will we have RDF as a standard and compatibility among all those representation languages?
Well, I think that we need a technical answer. Two candidates to reply.
Please go up to the podium because
I will answer by the first second question, which is easier for me. Migration of XML schemes. So in our AIP, we use different schemes, XML schemes, which are met, I think it's 1.4 version. And perhaps we will have to change. And in this case, we will have to migrate our package. Waiting for that, what is important is to keep information about schemas, version of schemas we are using now. So we have in our system, keep in special reference package each definition of each version of schemas we use. So it's premise, mats, mix, and so on. And if we have to change, for any good reason, it's a migration, so we have to get the package from the archive, to transform it, so to transform the manifest, and to do a new version of the package. But it's a quite heavy operation, so well, it's a big issue. So we are documenting all we are doing now, so that's the main thing. Your question was about the different kind of information we are storing. So it's mainly information to understand what are inside the package and more specifically in the technical way. So it's information about formats, so what kind of TIFF we use exactly, what kind of resolution each file has. So it's a quite hard issue because each time we develop a new domain, for example audiovisual domain, we have to call from experts of this format because it can be very tricky. I think particularly about audiovisual field where the technical aspects of format are very complicated. And what else? We have much information about the history of a digital document, so how the digitization happened and how the ingest phase happened. So I think it's more or less the main point. So that permits us to retrieve information about all these events. So for example, to retrieve all the documents who were digitized between 2000 and 2001 with a specific scanner. So that's what is useful. About bibliographic data, it's not a key point for us because we have it elsewhere in our catalog, which is more reliable. And we have also information about the history of a source document, so the physical document. So I hope I addressed your questions.
I'm Maria O'Dwyer from the Library Council in Ireland. I'm just wondering about how much time and effort is involved in migrating information using cloud technology. You mentioned it's cost effective, but does it actually, like if a library has a storage solution already in place, does it actually justify the cost and effort using cloud technology immediately? So this is a question for Peter Stefan, maybe.
So the cloud technology, from some perspective, it's mature enough to be used now in library environment. Nevertheless, it lacks a couple of functionalities. For example, security is not the strongest point, and also efficiency has not been measured and hasn't been compared to that of the execution on the physical hardware. So I think going back to the hype question, I think that we are still going on top of the hype regarding the cloud technology, because the hype is raised because the expectations are raised compared to the technological capabilities. And the hype goes down when these expectations no longer exist, and we go down to the strict technical level. So to answer your questions, from the strictly technical point of view, we can use cloud technology in libraries for piloting different functionalities. Actually, that we are also trying to do here in the Széchenyi Library. But it's not an off-the-shelf solution at the moment. Is it the sense of answer to your questions?
I suppose it's just the time involved in migrating information from a current storage solution into cloud technology, how much time and effort is involved in the migration of information.
It depends on the amount of data you have and the your network capabilities. So here, libraries typically don't have high bandwidth connections. And if you are talking about terabytes, tons of terabytes of data that you have to transfer from one environment to the other one, it takes a significant amount of time, just the transfer.
Thank you.
Is it okay?
Can I extend on that? All right. Thanks for the question. And along your line, yes, that was a hype question. Thank you. You clearly showed that you still believe in the hype, because your question was, how much time would it take into the cloud? Why do you want to use a cloud for that? The problem that you just mentioned with migrating data that you were referring to is a classical web-related problem. It takes a certain amount of time to migrate data. And the more specific point in this case was related to what we heard this morning as well, is that you have to change the form of data to make it structured and so on. And there is no cloud technology for that. There is no technology at all, because there is only proprietary solutions. So that is one of the major questions. If you just talk about how long it will take to migrate the data, it depends on your connection, it depends on your size. If you migrate it to us, for example, just about the size, just because of the bandwidth and whatever, 2 hours maximum, right? But you pay more for the bandwidth. So, yeah, the point is there is no technology for it. The basic technology all about storage, data management, and so on, that is there. It's not cloud. So, again, check your requirements. Check what you really want before you jump on the hype bandwagon and run the risk of paying more by just paying the additional features which you don't need.
More questions? Well, so I have some questions for you. I tried to reflect on what I heard this morning, and I came with four subjects that maybe can be discussed among us. So the first is, we have already started in these questions this afternoon, which is the role that we actually see for the clouds in the implementation of preservation of digital cultural heritage. And in particular, how do we see the fact that when we speak about preservation, we intend long-term preservation, and the long-term storage is not necessarily a characteristic of the cloud. So how the cloud can cope with the needs of the preservation and the fact that the cultural sector is looking at the cloud as the solution? I list you my questions, and then you choose those that are more urgent for you. Another question that came to my mind is that there are several advanced plans, pilots, and even implementation of preservation initiatives in Europe and worldwide. But don't you think that eventually we will need an harmonization of these initiatives? Because this morning we heard about two of them, and they are not necessarily talking one to the other. At least in the presentations, I didn't hear any reference of one to the other. So I'm wondering if we are in the situation as we were 10 years ago, when the cultural sector started to go online. And everybody was preparing his website, but the website of a cultural institution was completely different from the website of another. There were no common and shared platform of guidelines and standards and recommendations. So do you think that this is a wrong preoccupation, or it is really something that we have to work with? And then the third is, I heard some small words in the presentations about the fact that the private sector is coming, and it is going to play a role also on the preservation, because the experience of Google Book is a part of the preservation process. So what do you think, again, that should be the position of the European cultural heritage sector towards the participation of the private sector in the preservation? Because doing the preservation means to make copies, to put these copies in a safe place, in a safe environment that can be accessed for a long term and over which we do not have a control, continuous control, because it is a storage, it is a safe place for storage. So if we don't say now which are the rules for this preserved material, don't you think that we are from a certain way with the preservation, we are preserving our investments. But from the other way, if we don't say which are the rules to reuse and to access to this preserve the material, we are jeopardizing our investment, in particular if the private sector is arriving. So I don't know if this can stimulate the debate. Starting from the first, what do you think about the role of the cloud on the preservation and the fact that the cloud has not in its characteristic the long-term factor? Anybody who wants to intervene.
Yeah. So you want to go first, or? All right. Well, one thing as a start again, cloud is about accessibility. That is the main point. It does not mean, though, that it could not be extended for preservation purposes, and that means, in particular, as a back end. Things of like I presented with the high performance storage system, the HPSS that we are using, is basically the front end. Is basically about making providing fast access to large data files. But in the back end, in this case, we've got a tape archive, which is copying itself repeatedly in order to avoid data loss, and we've got checksums and everything running on top of it. So the question is rather, it's not so much do you want to have cloud for the long-term preservation, because I mean the question there is the other way around, do you want long-term preservation? If yes, then look for long-term preservation. Do not look for cloud, look for long-term preservation. The question rather is on the other side, what benefits do you have by exposing the long-term preservation via a cloud? And there is, as long as we talk about public as well, about public access, there is an obvious benefit, because one of the major problems that you have is to provide and to allow access to this amount of information. And as I said, there are security solutions and all that stuff available on clouds, ranging from data rights management all to the way to different types of security and encryption. So the question is rather, do you want to provide the information to a broad range of customers and in a fast way, I mean considering that the data size is getting bigger, and if you want to also provide this huge data files, then again you should come to the point of how do we get the data in a structured form and how do we enrich the cloud so as to make use of this type of information. I think that is a more important question than the long-term preservation from the cloud perspective. Because that is possible. If you want to have long-term preservation as a backend to a cloud, yeah, it's technically it's possible. So far it wasn't in nobody's interest.
So to my understanding, cloud currently is defined as a broad term to cover a great deal of things. We cannot really speak about clouds in its generic definition. So I mentioned, for example, the platform clouds, or the grid as a platform cloud. Grids are already capable of storing distributed data on remote data servers in a structured way. So this problem partially has been solved in the grid and scientific communities. However, it has nothing to do with long-term preservation, because long-term preservation is rather a media-related question, whether you trust your media on the long run or you cannot. Actually, Lajos von der Weest pointed out this this question in his presentation, that he believes, and I believe we too, that the most time-proof data storage currently is the paper. Any magnetic and optic data preservation tools are quite doubtful that they are capable of preserving data on the long run. And cloud, I mean a philosophy, how you access these media, cannot help you in this sense. So this is my vision on this question.
Let me add to this question. You were mentioning there when you show your slides that for the National Infrastructure NIIFE, the cloud means infrastructure services. So in this sense, and I like this definition, so to say, that means that for cultural heritage, infrastructure services are needed, I'm sure, because they lack the resources in financial terms, in technical terms, and so on and so on. So if we approach the question in this sense, that cloud is infrastructure services, then it is necessary to use cloud for preservation. Am I right or not? What do you think? Have I quoted you well or not?
depends on the economy of scales. I mean, if there will be a great deal of people who will be engaged in the cloud technology on the long run, then you must use, because you have to go along with them to use the same technology. You were talking about a poor financial conditions in the infrastructure, in the libraries. This is another condition, which means that you have to use cloud technology because you cannot afford a highly available and really demanding infrastructure in your own organization. So it's a slightly different question, but for this reason you should not use cloud. You can use web services, remote services, web hosting services, and any other kind of services that are available outside. But cloud, I mean infrastructure clouds, represent a low entry level. So as, for example, you don't have to invest a great deal of money in setting up your infrastructure and your machinery, and you don't have to spend too much money on your staff because you can purchase it from somewhere at a really low entry level, and then you can improve it gradually. So this is what the cloud philosophy might have some benefits for you here. Again, I was talking about the infrastructure clouds.
Just to complete the question, we don't use clouds, but what is important is that we have defined very detailed view, very detailedly our services we ask to our storage infrastructure. So it can be interesting to put on the table what a long-term preservation needs our service for, after if it's clouds or not, but what of the service which are asked. The first one, we wanted to have two copies of our data and which were distributed on two geographic sites different. So what's an important issue? Another one is the auto-healing capabilities. That means that when you store a file or document, whatever, you calculate a checksum on it, and you have to detect automatically when an error occurs. And so when an error occurs, the storage service must repair the file automatically. So we do that at access time, and in another way, we audit all our documents regularly. So we have also an audit service which is in charge to check regularly all the documents of our infrastructure. But that has a cost, but for long-term preservation, it's very important. What else? I think it's more or less all, but it's quite interesting.
Just one more comment. Actually, what I also mentioned, which is not a cloud service in strictly speaking, but for example, several storage virtualization services like redundant storage arrays, like redundant data storage between geographically dislocated sites might also facilitate the long-term preservation in the sense that, for example, if you lose the data on one of your sites, you will have a spare one in a remote location that you can use and you can access the data there. So these kind of services, high availability services, can improve your data storage, but I wouldn't consider them as a cloud. Maybe they are naturally a virtualization services.
Sorry. I don't want to extend it. I want to give the chance for Hannes to answer that, because what you're talking at the moment is storage and not long-term preservation. I hope you will say something about that.
So that's a point. I mean, what the cloud definitely can guarantee, or what's behind the cloud, is the bitstream preservation, so that the ones and zeros, as I pointed out in my presentations, are the same, and it's perfectly abstracted. So everything I can go on the internet, Amazon Cloud. I don't know if you can also do that, and order like a terabyte, and that's just perfect. But it does not give you the logical preservation. So when you put very old Word documents on it, it does not mean that you get something you can read and interpret back in 20 years. So that's something that a cloud doesn't give you. And in my opinion, that's not the task of a cloud, because it's not the core competence of a supercomputing center to offer long-term preservation. And not he's shaking his head.
At
least, so then you should, I don't know, team up with, you know, it's not, in my opinion, as I said, it's not the core competence of a supercomputing center to offer that. So, I mean, so for me, clouds are nice. So what you can definitely do is, so for example, in the case of the Austin State Archive, so we have huge contracts with Siemens, we have a huge data center. So they have a huge data center, one of the most modern in Europe, for which you pay a lot of money. But so the e-government data we are expecting to come in, we don't have any clue how much that will be. And for something like that, cloud would be perfect to say, okay, let's get a terabyte or get 2 terabytes and wait how much we get. And then when it kind of exceeds like 5 terabyte or 10 terabyte, then we consider giving it somewhere else or doing it ourselves. So I think what's a little bit missing is a clear business case of what a cloud can do for long-term preservation, more or less. But as I said, it's only bitstream preservation. Mm-hmm. So that's.
I have one. I think that there is also another consideration that is in addition to what has been said, that is even if we are only speaking about the bitstream preservation, and so all the domain of the preservation of the logic and the semantic is open, because there the solution is not yet achieved. But even if we are still speaking about bitstream preservation, the fact that the storage does not guarantee the preservation of the bitstream, and so it is necessary to do checksum and to verify, for example, through checksum that the data are still correct. This implies that in addition to storage, we need computing, because if the amount of data is large and we want to be certain that this amount of data that is preserved may be not for a long term because of the reasons that we said, but it is stored at least, that these data are kept correct, and so associated to the storage there is some computing demand. And so maybe to use a platform or an infrastructure, and then I still have to fully understand where is the border between the platform and the infrastructure, because we are playing with the words several times. But a place where I can get storage and computing associated at a low price can be of interest for the cultural sector.
I have to go in the front anyway. No, well, I say that. I don't really want to argue. I mean, I'm perfectly happy if you use computing and infrastructure, but for the purpose that you just explained, i.e. doing checksums and checking the data and ensuring that there is at least one valid copy, that is already all state of the art. bitstream preservation. We do that on our tapes. I mean, there's absolutely nothing to it. We don't need our supercomputer for steering the tapes. The tapes do it themselves. It's part of the tape logic. So you don't need computation for that end. Do not think about having computation on that lower end in order to keep the data in itself secure. If you just think about bitstream, no problem. You don't need a computer for that. You need tapes, yeah. All right. If you think about further things, like really, I mean, still being able to read the data in 10 years, that is not, as Hannes has pointed out multiple times, that is not a question of the bitstream, that is a question of the technology, one of the things. Do we still have tapes in 10 years? Do we still have 5-inch floppy disks? No. So that is one of the issues. The next issue is, of course, again, to interpreting the data, because, I mean, if it's stored in Word docx, yeah, all right, nobody will know that anymore in 10 years. So these are the issues. And there comes a bit of computation in there, depending on how you achieve it. But I think the computation that you're more interested in, if computation is one of the issues, is cross-relating all the information that you got. Because in order to make search efficient and so on, you need to have meta-information. And in order to interpret meta-information, you have to cross-reference it. And that is a very computation-intensive task.
Well, do you think, do you want to remain still on the cloud or shall we move to the next topic? Okay, next. My opinion, as I told you, is that the fact that there are many initiatives in Europe and the worldwide dealing with preservation and long-term preservation is requesting for an harmonization process, something that can first of all enable to reuse results, if there are successful results, to share solutions, to avoid the same mistakes, to avoid duplication of efforts, and eventually to share also services and actual piece of software or solutions for storage or solutions for logic preservation. But can you tell me which is your opinion or your experience in terms of harmonization of individual solutions with others? Do you, those who are running preservation projects, are you planning to work with other preservation projects, and those who are not yet running preservation projects, do you plan to start in cooperation with others or with your own project? So maybe if you don't mind, I suggest that we start from the presentation of this morning and then we move to the others. Because we heard this morning, Franz.
Thanks. Well, when you have to build a complete system, it's a little bit difficult to coordinate with other projects. So what we have tried to do is to build our system on open source components as much as possible. And when it was possible, to make them evaluate. What are they? Typically, the tool to characterize files. So we use Jove2, which is a tool which is done in California, I think. It's a community tool. And this year, we have preferred, we wanted to identify formats for web archive, ARC format. So we worked with them to make evaluate this software, this piece of software specifically. In some other tools, we have patched some bugs. So typically, in storage field, we use iRoad, which is a software who comes from a supercomputer world. And we have patched something. So to do our complete project, we have many specific code, but we try to use and make evolve different pieces of code. So I don't know if I answered the question.
Thank you. So may I ask to Switzerland?
We use a very sophisticated UK products for digital archive from the firm Tesla. And the first archives using this software was the National Archives of UK, and also British Library used these products, the Dutch colleagues used this product, the Austrian colleague used this product, Finland and Estland, Malaysia, they are a big community, they now forms this very good qualified product. So this is the field of digital archiving. In the SIA database archiving fields, we have established cooperation with the German's National Archives and with France. And I heard yesterday that also our Hungarian colleagues from National Archives will cooperate with us on the field of digital archiving of databases. We have now three languages in SIAD suite, but our focus is not really this application. We are very proud to have it and to have as a freeware for our colleagues in the world. Most important for us is to use this SIAD format. And this is the focus of our work in this year, to start the formalized process in the ESO standardization group. So I hope that we can start the standardization in next year.
Thank you very much. And may I say here from Austria also?
Yeah, we
if
are.
If it is possible in relationship with what we have.
So we are also using the product of the company Tesla. So it's our long-term storage. But of course, there is much more involved. So for the ingest part, we also use Jove 2. For characterization, Droid for identification. In the background, of course, is a huge Oracle database. So that's the tools we are using for preservation planning. Of course, we are using Plato to create the plans and also feed them into the repository. So once we haven't done that yet, but once we decide to go or to perform a certain preservation action, like migrating from one format to the other one, we also feed the plan into the repository so that we know why we did the migration and based on which plan we did it. That's on the stuff we are using.
May I ask a question before I turn the microphone to Laszlo? Are you using e-infrastructure provider services for your preservation purposes? Because now we are speaking about e-infrastructure providers and the link between e-infrastructure providers and cultural institutions. And if not, what is the reason? Do you want to answer?
So we don't use e-infrastructure. We use our own infrastructure. And there were two reasons. The first point is that we have bought the first part of our infrastructure some years ago. So the cloud was not so hype, and the second reason is that we are starting a system. It's quite hard to make it work, So we prefer to have our own resources here, and when it will be a regular work, perhaps we will change, but that's not the... it's not in our vision right now, but it's because perhaps we have started quite long ago.
Do you want to add?
This is a legal decision, a legal-based decision. Mostly collections of the National Archives are... perhaps 20% of them are secret. And the other 80% have a very strong protection for about 30 or 50 years. And after this 50 or 100 years, they are really open in Switzerland. So it is very difficult to use infrastructure outside. We have to have a very sophisticated infrastructure, but in our federation, in our network, in federal agencies.
Well, maybe if we speak about national infrastructure providers, that is NREMs, and the pictures can be a bit different. Because, I'm sure that if it's for research, research is can be as much secret as personal data, for example. And I'm sure that all the infrastructure is maintained by some government institution. And NREN is something like a government institution as well. So I don't think that's... that is the real answer. I understand the security reasons and the personal data protection side of the issue. But maybe there is something else that, for example, in the case of a library and most of our institutions, that's the maybe the lack of trust, the lack of... believe that they can own their data, control their data. So I think this must be changed, probably. Okay.
Lastly,
you wanted to say something.
Yes, but in another perspective, you were speaking about long-term preservation, and the public is the public has the duty to do that, and also mentioned the commercial sphere is doing the same. But what about the third sphere, the personal sphere? Let me have several examples. In the last century, Béla Bartók collected Hungarian folk songs and realized that those folk songs served by several hundred years. And the method of the long-term preservation method was the continuous use. So if the society has this method, then the preservation is not needed anymore. And this is the best method for long-term preservation. Unfortunately, currently the personal sphere is not equipped with proper tools. Although I know, for example, that your university developed a kind of a personal tool for digital preservation in the individual level. But we don't use the individual sphere for preservation of the public entities. So a kind of crowdsourcing approach is needed. My second example is really the Second World War, in which several art pieces survived in individual flats and houses by collections of big museums were stolen or destroyed. Again, another example where this kind of crowdsourcing approach is much better than the centralized public or private methods. So what is your opinion about the third sphere?
So coming back to the need of eventual need of harmonization of national systems, at least at European level, I would like to say that, first of all, we have to know what is ongoing in the different European countries concerning the preservation. And in this light, I think this is a prerequisite for going ahead. And in this light, I think that it is very important the work that we have undertaken within the CINET project. The idea is exactly to collect information about the system already running and the systems planned. And this is exactly a commitment for us to conduct this survey and to make the survey available for all, and to ask the cooperation, to ask all of you to cooperate with us in order to collect this information. And when we will have a clear picture of what is ongoing, and we can progress probably in the harmonization.
Well, any other comment?
The microphone, who is coming up?
Yes, talking about harmonization in many fields, this implies also the kind of creating a semantic layer of information. So for example, in cultural heritage, you have CDOC, CRM explaining in a established and recognized way what is cultural heritage information. Do you plan to have something like this? Because I think it would also ease cooperation if you have a common semantic layer or interpretation of understanding what is the task of long-term preservation.
I think that this is part of what we would like to discuss in terms of ideas for the joint activities plan. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can put this suggestion as a component of the work that we would like to do. So if there is no other comment, okay, another one.
We heard yesterday from our colleague from the European Commission that the infrastructure available at the moment in Europe with 8 gigabit, I think, or gigabyte, is available for all the academia and research institutions in Europe, or at least in the 27 member states. A question now. Is it possible to extend that to include also the whatever else cultural heritage institutions? This is the first. As a result from the TCNET. Yeah? Contribution. Now. Second, it's not all about digitizing, bringing the analog to the digital. It's not only how to store it, to preserve it, to have it ready and included under the roof of Europeana and make it visible to the rest of the world. The issue is that if I have a book, if I have a song, if I have a video, if I have an image or a drawing about Beethoven, I don't want to have a list of items related to Beethoven. I want from this digital know-how and the machinery behind to give me an answer in the way of an encyclopedia, small one, within a couple of, let's say, nanoseconds or seconds. So I'm not interested if my data are in Australia, and it takes 1 year to be visible, I don't know where and how. For me now, the question is, who is taking care of the preservation of the semantics, not only of the formats of the data? Who is taking care of all this information, this multimedia information, to be linked together? And once when a student in the elementary school asks about Beethoven, receives the answer in the way to understand it. Or if a professional in the classic music area and so on makes the same request to receive in the appropriate professional way the same question. This is something that is challenging also the Commission and all the community, our community, not only member states, but also cultural heritage authorities. So if we have a statement from our colleagues from Brussels, it will be good. The question will come in Luxembourg on Monday or on Tuesday, yeah? Thank you.
I only heard the first part, and then I was occupied. But as regards the bandwidth of cultural institutions, I think this is a national issue. Jean has 10 to sometimes even 100 gigabit connectivity offering between member states, but depending on the individual member states, some universities have a high-speed connection and others have a lower connection less fast connection. But in all cases, there is more than sufficient bandwidth available on a European and also on a national level, as far as I can see. That was your first part of your question. And then I went to my colleague to show him something. So if you could...
That it's very complicated on a national level to solve the problem. Why you don't take it over and you make an initiative so that it will be handled the same way as you did it with the universities and the research centers, include also the cultural. So this is the...
This question was already raised, so you don't need to record it again. we have no control over national institutions, and we don't want to have control over national institutions. We are not taking over anything. If you talk about Géant is only taking care of the interconnectivity between member states, but on a national level, the responsibilities is with the national research and education networks. The same for EGI. Is based also on national grids initiatives, and the Commission is creating the glue on a European level. So, and the idea behind the DCNet project is to create on a national level the coordination in order for us to step on a higher level. And we are funding at this moment in time the DCNet project in order to create this communist opinion. And this is also of crucial importance for this project. If you want to go on in the future from an ERANET to a digital heritage infrastructure based on long-term preservation or on online accessibility, then you would really need to work here and not ask us. We putting in the seed money, but you have to have your noses in the same direction.
Marinos, I think that you have urgently joined DCNet, because in fact the countries participating in DCNet have already signed at the national level a memorandum of understanding between the Ministry of Culture and the national NRN and the grid in order to facilitate this this cooperation and to foster exactly the cooperation between the cultural institutions and the infrastructure. So please join DCNet in order to be aware and to know what is what we are doing, and also opportunities for your country.
Rossella, I'm speaking about the preservation, about the sustainability of yes. the DCNet. DCNet will finish somehow, and the support of the
yes, DCNet. But the memorandum remains. Memorandum remains. You know that European projects produce results that should be sustained also in the future. So,
and we have the common strategic or the Horizon 2020.
Yeah. We have the Horizon 2020. Cultural heritage is not well included there. It's not well included. This is a fact. I mean, if we see the comments received by the Commission from the public consultation of the Green Paper, cultural heritage is not there. And nobody gives us the guarantee that cultural heritage will be in a very strong way.
Talking about DCNet and that it ends in 1 year from now, maybe a few months more. This is an ERANET. The idea is in the ERANET to join forces, ministries, so grant holders, funding agencies, and ministries who are the funding agencies, and who take the decisions on a national level. Sit together in this project in order to come to a what is written here, joint activities plan followed by a joint type of call. I think you are here in order to come to these conclusions. If you come and be proactive as a group and come up with a joint call on whatever issue which you have to discuss, then you are creating from the bottom up, from the member states up, a situation where you prove that you are a community that is taking action in order to do the important things that they were saying that are important things. So, and we did for that only the basic organization by having you funded to give you 2 years the time to come up with a kind of a joint type of idea on funding a future activity. Having said this, I think it's important, and that's also I think what is now on the agenda, to discuss on these issues. What will you try to achieve with this project? If you manage to have a joint call for proposals, for whatever amount of money, that's not that important, but if you can show that you are really following up on the activities and not being dependent only on funding, but that you are proactive and take action, then of course there will be also in the future, in the Horizon 2020 or beyond that, where there in any case will be also attention to cultural heritage. You are in a very good position to follow up on that in future calls for proposals. So I think without further ado, focus on the issues that are here at stake at this moment in time in order to come up with a joint activities plan leading to a joint call of proposals within the next year.
So thank you very much for the question and the answer, the answers that put me in the right position to arrive to the final point of this long working day. Well, as it was said before by Rossella and our project officer Wim Janssen, this conference has been one event organized in the frame of DCNet. DCNet is an ERANET, which is a European Research Area Network, a network of program owners, of ministries and agencies that own and manage programs at the national level. The final scope of DCNet is after having explored the possibilities of using e-infrastructure facilities for the digital cultural heritage, and yesterday and today we have worked in particular on the preservation, but there are other areas that are complementary to the preservation. Having explored this, we have prepared a priority list of services that we think are most important for the cultural heritage sector and can benefit of the use of the e-infrastructures. And as you can see, the first is the long-term preservation, and for this reason we had this conference on this topic. But there are also persistent identifiers, because if we don't have a system for the management of persistent identifiers, it will become hard then to move around the preserved data. Interoperability and aggregation, because this is the basis of what we imagine that will be the digital cultural heritage infrastructure of the future. And there was a slide in the presentation of Rossella yesterday that was exactly saying this. We have national systems for the preservation, but also for the other activities and the other services. And these national systems should be interoperated into the new, as a concept, infrastructure, but not new as a new machines, because this is not what we want to do. So interoperability and aggregation are is an area of work. Advanced search, because as long as the amount of data that we have, we have to have instruments to move in this amount of data easily and in an easy way for, in terms of user interaction. So, for example, all the area of the visualization, and in particular the 3D visualization, is an area that is a part of this construction of infrastructure. Certainly the data resource setup, because storage is a major problem for the cultural institutions that are producing data, but also user authentication and access control, because as long as we put our data into the infrastructure, the memory institution put data into the infrastructure, they want to be certain about who is accessing what. And finally, IPR and digital rights management. So as you can see, from the 2 to 7, these are services that are servicing also the long-term preservation of the digital cultural heritage. So on this priority list of services, we need in the frame of the CINET to construct a joint plan of activities, which is a plan to implement all these with a certain steps, a certain range of steps, from the most immediate micro initiatives, something that can be done easily, quickly, during the project to show the commitment, something that can be already committed to be done after the end of the project, and something that we think should be eventually part of the next national plans of digitization and preservation. So this is the concept of our joint activities plan, and we are working on it, and when I say we, I mean the partners of CINET, that are 8 ministries of culture in Europe, plus the newcomers, the new countries that are joining the CINET, and we already have the agreement with the Agency for Digital Culture, Digital Cultural Heritage in Latvia, and the Generalitat of Catalonia. We are discussing with the many other countries, the Library Council in Ireland as well. and we are discussing with the many other countries, we would like to invite the program owners of countries that are not yet in this net to join our discussion and to join the definition of this plan in terms of which are the national programs that can contribute to the implementation of this plan. And we would like to invite the memory institutions, museums, libraries, archives, audiovisual repositories to contribute to the definition of this plan with their own priorities, their view on what is necessary for their work. So you have all the details of our website and email for interacting with the DCNet project, and I personally remain at your disposal for any question. You can find the address to send the comments and contributions on the DCNet leaflet that is available on the table outside if you didn't get it. So, said this, we have arrived to the end of the conference, and so it is the time for conclusions.
Antonella. Antonella.
Yes.
Just a few things that that I think are very interesting, and of which I do not know to what extent you all are aware of. In the Six Framework Program, there was a project which was called CASPAR. Mm-hmm. No. You all know about it.
We know it.
I didn't know it, so I must admit, because it was not in my field. But it came to my knowledge, as we have now a in the infrastructure, a project which is called SCIDIP-ES. And SCIDIP-ES is a project that will upgrade CASPAR prototype components into scalable, robust e-infrastructure components to support digital preservation of all types of digital objects. Before the DCNet, which is not supposed at this moment in time to do operational work like a project, but I do think that it's important for the partners and all the other institutions involved to see to what extent these type of projects like the CASPAR and the SCIDIP-ES could serve your goals. To what extent? Maybe I am throwing something now in an arena which was already fought for many years, I don't know. But for me at least, from a distance, looking at those projects, seeing that OIS is involved, seeing that they are looking also into persistent identifiers, etc., that there might be complementarity in the things that the cultural heritage area would like to do and what is being done in CASPAR as a system, and SCIDIP-ES, which is basically focusing on earth science, but the digital objects in earth science can, to my knowledge, not be too much different from digital objects after they have been scanned in the cultural heritage. So if anybody could say something about what is the similarities or what is the big difference, then I would appreciate that. Otherwise, let's just have this as a point for attention of the people in this project to see to what extent this is usable. I invite everybody to explain a bit more on it.
Okay. In the
field of digital preservation, there have been a number of projects over the years, and especially in the framework program 7, but also started in the 6. And I think in 7 there were at least 14 projects. Kaspar was one of them. One of the bigger one was also Planets, and the SIARD, for example, which was managed, is also a part of the platform for projects, I suppose, for Planets. You say no? Well, they use it. So what is interesting here now is to look into these 14 or 15 projects and see what can we learn from them. In Luxembourg, about 1 month ago, people from all these projects were gathering together with other experts to see what can we learn now and what can we do for the future. And that was the base for what the Commission will do in the next coming years up to the year of 2020. And so there's a lot of lessons learned out there, and some of them have already been implemented in the DCNet project. But when we found that the long-term preservation is not there any longer, but is on the top, the first thing we had to do then is to start a discussion and see what does it mean? What are we talking about? And it's obvious now when we look from today that there are several dimensions. We have the born digital, we have the democratic aspect, we have the aspect of what happened now with cultural heritage. We know that small institutions have been digitized for, well, nearby 10 years now, and they have huge problems to handle this. They have no infrastructure, they have no procedures and routines for the long-term preservation. We have also the universities, the research community, who also have the same kind of problems. And I think it was clear from the presentations today that there are several problems that we are actually are touching here. So go back, see what has been done, try to see what's in the next program, what the Commission will say, and there is on the web also presented a short paper telling what was the conclusions from this expert meeting when all the projects were there, which we have actually have people, some of us were actually there also, and see what we can do with it. So we can see, and I think you're quite right. I mean, this is very essential. One thing that me being an archivist see directly, that now we have gathered quite a lot of information. We have also looked into initiatives that are here and now, which we can use. And the next step is to see, well, okay, what can we learn from this? What can we do? What will be the practical solutions here? And we don't know yet, because we haven't had the conference, but this will be something. And one of the things that is obvious, that lessons learned from other projects, Kaspar, Shaman, et cetera, Planets, also initiative like SIARD, et cetera, is one of the main thing, one of the pillars that we have to use, and see how we can get this fits together with the needs that we can see from the cultural heritage institutions.
Not forgetting some international projects which are...
We have also national projects, yes. I just took some of them, but there's a lot of national projects also going on. This is very exciting, actually. And I think we have opportunities here. We have challenges, but I think the opportunities are more opportunities than challenges, actually. So that we can do something good. And I think that this conference will be one of the, what you say, on the road, there are road marks, which you can see. And this is one of the road marks, which I can see. So this is comments for what you say.
Thank you. I hope you had a chance to read the conclusions, because that was included in your folder. I don't want to go through it word by word, but I would like to ask you for comments. Are there any statements that must be changed or do not express the things that were happening during the 2 days of this conference, or maybe there is disagreement upon we agreed. And perhaps you would like something to add to the most important things that are listed here.
Do we want to read it once together?
Would you like me to read it aloud? Okay. Conclusions of the Budapest Conference. We can put the Budapest DCNet Conference if you wish. In June 2011, at the Budapest DCNet Conference, the EU experts coming from the field of culture, heritage and e-infrastructure, the following issues were discussed. The rapid development of information and communication technology that opens a window of opportunity for e-infrastructure to serve cultural heritage and at the same time raises infrastructure needs of memory institutions to be met. The global nature of the development of e-infrastructures, tools and resources to support digital cultural heritage, researchers' global endeavors. Long-term preservation that is among the highest priorities of DCH researchers and users. Legal aspects of long-term preservation that are to be brought in conformity with the requirements of the information society. The launch of a joint activities plan to promote coordinated effort for more tailored infrastructure services for DCH, digital cultural heritage. The participants of the conference agreed upon the importance of cooperation between the digital cultural heritage community and e-infrastructure providers, the evidence of benefits of a common e-infrastructure for cultural heritage researchers and users, that e-infrastructure must develop to meet the evolving needs of digital cultural heritage and digital cultural heritage and its users must engage actively in this process, that collaboration between DCH and e-infrastructure providers should be actively supported at all levels to their mutual benefits. This collaboration can be facilitated by the emerging focus on service-oriented delivery models that encourage the creation of well-defined services that can be exploited and developed at the same time. The necessity to develop virtual research communities for DCH to allow a group of geographically dispersed researchers to work together through the use of information and communication technologies. The participants stressed the need to raise awareness of the improvement of national infrastructures and their alignment with agreed standard procedures for identity management and assurance, the need of stronger collaboration between computing service providers and researchers, the challenges of data infrastructures and persistent data storage, the dependence of Europe's leading role and global contribution on the ability to provide digital cultural heritage researchers and users with access to the very best scientific and research tools of e-infrastructures. That's it. I'll insert first the DCNet in the title line.
The need of a stronger collaboration between computing service providers and researchers. Here. So, may we suggest something? Second bullet point of the last...
Please, the microphone. Take the mic. Second bullet point, the global nature.
Over the last part.
Last part. The need of stronger collaboration. Mm.
The need of a stronger collaboration among computing service providers, researchers, and the cultural institutions.
Okay. Institute in France, research and cultural institutions.
Yes, comma, providers, comma, researchers and the cultural institutions.
Any other comments?
Yes, maybe this second bullet point can become the first.
This bullet point?
Yes.
It's there. Yes?
So, I have a comment. Or
please, the mic.
So this is a comment slash question. So I'll phrase it as a question. Do you see the need for closer collaboration or maybe liaison with other communities having similar needs for preservation in order not to risk building a silo and also in order to build more critical mass into this important area?
Yeah. Do you have a concrete textual?
Well, I can try. So liaison with other communities with similar needs for e-infrastructure services.
Insert it where?
Let's see.
Awareness or agreed?
Maybe raise awareness of, so we could.
So before this, we was put it the second.
Maybe a separate bullet.
Separate bullet, but second bullet.
Okay, that's fine. So liaison with other communities with similar needs for e-infrastructure services.
Please say again from the very beginning.
Okay, I'll bring it up.
You can do it.
Other communities with similar needs for e-infrastructure services.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? And suggestions.
C'è una ripetizione di SILAC, di SIAC.
Yes, please.
Di SIAC e di SIAC.
Oh, microphone. Antonella, ah, please.
I mean, it's not a substantive point, it's just a question about there's lots of use of the word DCH, and it's not clear what the DCH is.
Yes,
sometimes it's researchers.
At the beginning, it's in the bracket.
Yes, but is it always DCH researchers?
Digital
cultural heritage stands for DCH, or DCH stands for digital cultural heritage, and then researchers.
But is it always researchers? I'll give you an example. If you look at the middle section of bullets, the fourth one, the collaboration between DCH, so if you just read it out, the collaboration between digital cultural heritage, who are they? That digital cultural heritage is not people.
There is a sector.
Sector, that's what I'm saying. Should it be sector?
Sector.
Yeah, so I think you need to add that where you've got
fourth
DCH.
Fourth bullet point.
That e-infrastructures must develop to meet the innovative needs of the...
Down there.
But it's in other places as well.
Yes.
Okay. The DCA sector.
Any other?
I don't know where we would do it and if it's relevant, anything about cloud at all.
peer sector as well in the further value chain?
We did discuss things to do with the cloud, but the cloud's not mentioned at all.
That's in general the rapid development of information and communication technologies. Maybe that
including the cloud or something.
Yeah. Including the cloud. Yeah. It's that's the beginning. Technology, including the cloud.
And also maybe our colleague from the commission.
I just say we did
spend quite a lot of time talking about clouds, not to mention it. The other question is to the European Commission representative. Should you be mentioned in this communication in any way?
Okay. For what reason?
Well, you're here. You're here.
This is something from the project.
But this is about the conference.
Yes, but...
Conclusions of the conference.
Yes, but I do not see what my role is in that. It's your conference.
Well, this is actually not an official EU document, so this is...
Okay.
Okay. Well, that's just the conclusion of the conference. Yes. So whenever we want to say that was a conference and that was a topic and that what the participant agreed upon, and this is the whole DCNet project is about raising awareness and building networks, of course. So if you agree, then I think that we can endorse it as, we can find endorsed, say it is endorsed. Okay. Thank you. So we have the conclusions. And I would like to say some.
Maybe we could. maybe we could add a final sentence about the action that will be the definition, the participation to the definition and the launch of the joint activities plan of the CNET. So we can say that the participants agree to contribute to the preparation of the joint activities plan.
That's, Do you so agree? We have an action. If you agree, then we can add.
Do
it. But the first
that
thing
you
that
will
you
participate to the definition. It is not yet a commitment. It is a participation to the definition. Do you think that you can agree? You cannot agree that you participate.
it's one of the objectives of the project.
Eh? May you explain?
Maybe the participants didn't know about it. That they have
to raise awareness, not to do, but to raise awareness.
Yes,
it's there to raise awareness.
But we agree that we will raise awareness about the preparation of the joint activities plan.
No.
I try to phrase it.
No. No, it's okay.
I try to phrase what is my idea, and then it is just an idea.
the preparation and
about the preparation.
Preparation.
About the preparation of. John.
Yes, the of their.
Of the day implementation. No, about the preparation of the implementation. Of the,
yes, no, the idea is that these conclusions will be implemented in the joint activities.
No, so
about the preparation of
the implementation of the conclusions.
Ah, the conclusions.
Okay.
I thought it was of the joint activities.
Joint activities plan.
Of these conclusions.
In.
In.
Right, package
Do you
six.
Agree with this?
Okay, so we have the final wording of the conclusions. And now I would like to say that this conference was something that went in line with the objectives of the DCNet project. That the main goal is to bring together the cultural institutions, cultural heritage institutions, and the e-infrastructure providers. And we've seen very good examples of cooperation, starting cooperation. We found out that there is still a lot of room for this cooperation. And I think that this conference will facilitate the links to come together, to work together, and that will be of benefit for both partners, both for cultural heritage and both for e-infrastructures. And just a personal thing that I would like to mention, that in Hungary it helped a lot to bring together the national e-infrastructure provider with our cultural heritage institutions, and we can see now the results. Of course, it has to be further developed, but now there is something that has started. A second very important goal of the DCNet project was to raise awareness of the need of cooperation between infrastructures and cultural heritage institutions. And I think in this respect, this was a great conference. At this point, I would like to thank our excellent speakers and presenters for their speeches and presentations. I would like to thank our partners in the DCNet project that helped us to organize this workshop, the representative of the commission who had given us advice how to organize the event, I mean the subject, how to make more how to achieve that the lesson of the conference will be delivered to the participants. And also to the host, the Hungarian National Széchenyi Library, to our interpreters in their booth. That was a very hard job during the hot times. I mean, yesterday it was very hot in the room. And last but not least, I would like to thank all of you for coming and taking part in this conference and being very active. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ivan. Just some words for thanking the national, this conference was very, very interesting for all our community. The speakers and the presentation were excellent. And I would like to thank the National Library for hosting this conference, all the
Hungarian colleagues that worked very hard for the organization of the conference and also for other initiatives linked to the conference. But particularly, I would like to thank Ivan, because he was the pillar of the Hungarian, he is, and he was the Hungarian pillar of many projects that we have run in these years. And I remember that we started the cooperation with Hungary and with Ivan in 2004 during Minerva Plus project. And so I would like to particularly thank Ivan for this excellent cooperation, for his excellent work and for his excellent results.
Okay, so the official part of the conference is finished. I would like to say some information on the Night of Museums. If you stay here overnight, in your folders you can find an armband. This one here. And you can use it for entering all the museums that organize programs. They start, the programs start mostly at 6 o'clock, and you can use public transport with showing the armband. So anywhere you go, you can use, you can ride the trams, buses, metro, free of charge by showing the armband. So I hope you will enjoy your stay here even tonight, and this is a very interesting night here. You will see it. I hope the weather will be fine, and I hope you enjoyed your stay in Budapest. You will return.